So Professor Somaraj has told me that you're all very enthusiastic students, all determined to get ahead in your studies, and also very socially active, getting involved in social activities within the city, such as arranging doctors to come to give medical aid to poor people. So, thank you very much. Professor Somaraj asked me to speak on constructive reading habits or any other subject that I like to speak on. Well, I was introduced as a writer. I've written a few books. Before one can be a writer, one has to be a reader. Do any of you you've done research projects? Not yet. That comes later. First you have to study, then you do research. So writing means, first of all, there has to be research on the topic that you're doing. And I'm sure anyone who's done any research will agree that for out of all that you research, you maybe put in 1%, what ends up in your writing is maybe 1% or less of that you research. A lot of work goes into it. A lot of background information goes into it. Will you agree with that? Research doesn't mean that you just read something and reproduce it, but you take from different sources. Like a honeybee, you take nectar from different flowers and take it in and regurgitate it in a more pleasing form. And this is supposed to contribute to human society, especially if one is to get a PhD or similar degree. One has to do research, and one is supposed to come up with something original for the benefit of human society. It's no use producing something that's already there. You have to come up with something extra. So, I do a lot of research. For many years I've been working on an extensive biography of our Param Gurudev, that means the guru of our guru. And my compatriots keep on asking me, when is it going to be ready? I don't know, because I don't know when research will be ended, because there's no end. The nature of research is that you go, there's one little point, and you start to research it, and you find you're in a whole new universe of information. It's endless. It goes on and on and on. And this particular subject, the subject matter of our Param Gurudev, not just he went with here, he went there, he did this, he did that, but what his teachings are to me so relishable that actually I don't want to finish reciting research yet. I just want to go on. But at some point in time we have to finish our thesis and publish it. And then what? Then it's finished and then you go on. Does it never end? Reading and researching, it never ends. Especially in the modern world, I mean, I think we're in quite different fields here. I'm researching and writing and speaking on the spiritual field, and engineering is, you could call it applied materialism. Engineering deals very much with what's in this world and how to make facilities for the world to go on in its present course. But the nature of even material knowledge is that it's unlimited. There are so many research students all over the world, and they're coming up with so many things. When I was a kid at school, that's more than 30 years ago, there was some idea floating around in the ether that nowadays science has more or less reached its summit. We've gone to the moon. and that's it. There's nothing more to do. But how much more has come since that time? I remember that at that time also, the first computer engineers, the first opportunities were coming up. At that time, computer meant something about this, something which would line the whole wall of this room, and you put in some simple operation, and the answer would come out in ticker tape. You probably don't even know what ticker tape is. It's something from the past. You remember that? Years ago. The answer would come out. But nowadays, everyone has a computer, they carry it around with them, and you know, you can be flying from one city to another, and you can log in on the internet, and just applied science, applied technology has gone ahead in a manner practically unimaginable for most people, even within my lifetime. So who knows what the future will bring? Technology is going on and on. What's the future? We heard a lot about superconductivity that was going to bring in. That seems to have got held up. They ran into some snags. They haven't really made the kind of advancement they were hoping for. I remember maybe 10 years ago seeing an advertisement from Singapore Airlines saying that within 5 years we'll fly you from Singapore to London in 3 hours due to advances in superconductivity. But it didn't happen. They didn't make the breakthroughs that they were hoping for. Maybe in 10 years' time we can fly from Vishakhapatnam to London in 2.5 hours or so. Who knows? It's a highly developing technological world, and for those who take pleasure in that, it's exciting, it's interesting. There are different kinds of people in this world, and for most people, enjoyment is at a pretty gross level. Especially in the modern age, I was saying about improvement of technology, but if we consider if there's improvement of consciousness, this we should also consider. Like I was saying, now the internet is available in everyone's home. But it was hoped that by this, with the information highway being open to everyone, that the level of knowledge, actually the level of knowledge is available. You can just type in and Google away and you can get information on practically anything. And it was hoped that this would bring up human society and make it more knowledge-based and improve the level of human life. But unfortunately, the major use of the internet, the most prominent use, is for pornography. So we have some problems there, which, you know, it may seem very good, but what it actually does is bring the consciousness down to animal level. So, yeah, I mean, technology's improved, but human consciousness on the whole hasn't improved. That was another hope from my childhood days. I'm just telling you because I'm looking back and what we were thinking the future would be like and what it's become. And you're at that stage now where you're going to be contributing to the ongoing technological development of society with the hope of improving society. So, yeah, in some ways it's improved, but there are problems there also due to misuse. There was a great hope that by giving education to more people, that human society would become more enlightened, more tolerant, but it seems that human society is becoming less tolerant. One of my colleagues, a sannyasi, He was about to go to Bangladesh, and he got some information that there's been serial bombings in Dhaka. But he said, but anywhere he went, he said, well, you know, it's everywhere now. Where will you go where you can say there won't be serial bombings? You don't expect it in Vishakhapatnam, but then no one expects it anywhere. It can happen any time, any place. It's misuse of technology. So, I don't know very much about the workings of technology. Most of us don't. There are so many fields, just like you use a motor car, but most people don't know how it works. You use a computer, you just have some very vague idea of how it works. So, it's a vast field. Or vast technology is a conglomeration of several vast fields, actually. And I must admit, I don't know very much about it. But my specialty is spiritual knowledge. And I would like to speak to you today on the subject of how genuine spiritual knowledge is required for technologists, and indeed for everyone. My reading, we talked about constructive reading habits. The reading that I've been doing for the last 30 years or so, and I do quite a lot, is on the subject of the most constructive subject, that which is at the very core of our existence. As I was saying, technology is applied materialism. We live in this material world, and therefore there should be some arrangement for living in it. And in the technological age, that means bridges, various kinds of buildings, various kinds of machines, and microchips, and all various facets of technological society. This is what makes society. This is the, we can say, the bricks and mortar of modern society. What the gross products by which we live and work in this world. And you can say that even the sadhus, they're also dependent on this in many ways. We came here not by walking. We were late, but if we had come by walking, we would have been a lot later. So thank you to the technologists. So we also use computers and email, so many things, because if we have to write books, it doesn't make sense in the modern age to write books by any other means than by using word processing. If you do it by the old system of typing it in, that's also technology. Typing in a typewriter and then physically correcting it by hand, giving it to the layout man, giving it to the linotype. I used to be hand typesetting, and then there came linotype, and then there came photo typesetting, and then you have to check it again and again and again. There are no spell checkers. So it makes sense in the modern age to use a computer. So sadhus in this sense are also dependent upon the engineers of this world. But there should be a symbiotic relationship. Symbiotic means where both parts work together for the overall benefit of each other. They gain from each other's input. So we may say that, well, technologists don't need spiritual information. We don't need spiritual information to build bridges or to make computers. Maybe not. But you may kindly consider that although you are making constructions, using machines and technology, you, the person who are designing that and seeing how it functions, are not merely a machine. As a person, you have hopes, desires, and emotions. Making machines is not purely functional. There's an aesthetic aspect also. There was in the modern age, now we're in the postmodern age or the post-postmodern age. In the modern age, there was the Bauhaus movement, which in applied technology, which had the motto or thesis that everything should be simply made in a functional manner. There's no need for any aesthetical factor. This is quite apparent if we go to the cities of the ex-USSR and Eastern Europe. Has anyone been? You must have been. Where did you go? St. Petersburg? You're in the Merchant Navy? Yeah. Odessa?
Yeah, Odessa.
Odessa, you went to St. Petersburg? Ukraine. That's Odessa, no? Oh, Odessa's in Ukraine, yeah. So you find all the buildings there, they're all just like boxes, isn't it? They're completely drab, just functional. And they put the, in the USA, the ex-USSR, they put the power stations right in the middle of the city. Did you notice that? You'll find the power station right in the heart of the city, so it looks horrible. You also? Yeah, so it's functional, but it doesn't uplift the human spirit. So nowadays they try to make buildings and machines and everything also pleasing to the senses, not just purely functional. Because we may be making machines, but human beings are not machines. We need more than something that functions. We have the emotional aspect also. So the emotional aspect is a symptom of the ultimately spiritual aspect. A machine has no emotions. A machine is a humanly designed object with a function to perform. Now, the human body is a machine. The human mind is sometimes also studied as a machine, but it's a lot, even the human body, it's much more difficult to, it's a lot more complex than any man-made machine. Even one cell in the human body is far more complex than any machine, any human being has ever made. And the mind is still more subtle, so the mind is more difficult to predict. But the mind is also a facet of the soul. So spiritual knowledge is required in human society because we are spiritual beings. Now those who are on the grossly mechanical platform will deny this because they just see the body and they try to negate the emotions and the feelings, but we can't deny that we have them. Machines don't get depression. Machines don't feel elated. Now they're advertising Bajaj. They made more than 1 million scooters. But the 1 millionth scooter didn't, when it came off the production line, it didn't start popping its horn automatically. I'm number 1 million. Because it's just another machine. But the engineers, they said, oh, they became, yes, this is something wonderful. So, in human society, in technological education, there has been a trend to try to pretend that human beings are just another kind of machine. But we have emotions, we're not just machines. And one product of the technological society is that it's tended to downplay the human needs and make society very impersonal, to the extent that it's quite common in the Western world, and it's going to become more and more like this in India, that people live next to each other for 15 years and never say a word to each other and don't even know their names. That's especially common in Sweden, which is considered one of the most advanced countries in the world. But people are very, if you meet people, they'll say, hello, how are you, very nice, and smile. But they don't make friends, they never make friends. They don't have friends. Because what do you need friends for? You have machines, and you have food, and they lost the art of knowing each other as people. So there's a danger in mechanistic education. It's good that you're doing social work, because that helps to keep us in contact with people, which after all, the machines are meant for people. We should understand what it means to be a person. So spiritual knowledge is supposed to give us that knowledge by which we understand that we are a person. Now, mostly spiritual knowledge, as it's taught today, is also at a rather superficial level. That means you be good, you be nice, smile at others. Okay, that's good. We're not saying don't be good, don't be nice, don't smile at others. But if we consider that as persons we are more than a machine, wouldn't it be good to do some research and find out what does it actually mean to be a person? Do we have any volunteers to give some ideas on what does it mean to be a person? Anyone like to say? What does it mean to be a person? Anyone like to come up and give a short ditty on what it means to be a person? Anyone? Any volunteers? What does it mean to be a person? Anyone has any ideas? Anyone ever thought about it? Okay. Human beings are machines, right? Is that right? No, it's true to some extent, isn't it? The human body is a machine. But a human being is not a machine. So what's the difference between the body machine and a tape recorder? Well, you could say one is organic and one is inorganic. But there's a lot more to it than that, isn't it? Human beings have birth and death, ambitions, if you take a tape recorder and give it hammer treatment, you'll spoil it, right? Will the tape recorder protest? normal. But the owner will protest. If we put a hammer on your finger, you'll protest. Okay. Now the human body is a machine, and the tape recorder is a machine. The human body feels pain. The tape recorder doesn't feel pain. So what is the nature of that pain? Well, medically, you could analyze that when a strong force comes in contact with the nerves, then the C fibers fire. And so some people have proposed that instead of saying, I feel pain, you should say, my C fibers are firing. But you don't say that, you say, ah! If you just sit there and someone puts the hammer down,
my C fibers are firing.
But you don't. It's an extreme experience, isn't it? So whereas emotions are strong, they are very strong feelings. What do you feel like when Pakistan thrashes India at cricket? What do you feel like? Feel very bad? Feel very disappointed? You want to throw tomatoes in the face of all the Indian cricket team? What do you feel like when India thrash Pakistan? Have a party? Bring out the fireworks? Why? Because we identify with India. We are India. I mean, I'm not really Indian, I've lived here for many years, but alright, you're all Indian and you identify yourself as being part of India. So we can say that part of being a person is that we feel pain and pleasure. And it's not just because there's gross pain, just like if someone hits you on the finger with a hammer. But there's also the pleasure of identifying with other people, so that when India wins, you feel great. And but that also brings pain, doesn't it? Because when India loses, then you... Oh. Last ball. You need a one to win. And instead, caught out. Oh! Lost the game. Could have won it. So why? Why should we feel like that? After all, it's just a ball is flying through the air and someone catches it. So why should we feel, oh! Why is that? Because we identify with that situation, right? To tell you the truth, I don't give a damn whether India win or lose, because, and I'm from England, and I don't give a damn whether England win or lose either, because I'm not very much interested in cricket at all. So, I'm just using it as an example, that you will feel some pleasure or pain depending on how that ball is hit and caught and thrown. But to me it makes no difference. As a kid I was interested in soccer. So I was interested in how people are kicking the ball this way and that. But then you come to think that, well, it doesn't really make that much difference whether the ball goes this way or that. After all, it's just a ball moving through the air. But why do we take pleasure and pain? We feel sorry to hear of serial bombings in Delhi or Dhaka. Someone was pleased. Otherwise they wouldn't have put the bombs. They were happy. Good. The bombs went off. This 9/11 in America, they remember 9/11, September the 11th, 2001. The planes were flown into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center. And Americans, and they were much disturbed. But apparently many people in Arab countries felt, okay, they got what they deserved. So the same event, but different people saw it in a different way. What from the Indian side are considered terrorists, from the Pakistani side are considered freedom fighters. It's a question of perception. In the Indian papers, they read bombings in Kashmir, and Indian people think very bad. And from Pakistan's side, they may think very good. It's a question of perception based on identification. So what's the spiritual perspective on this? The spiritual perspective is that as persons living in this world, we are subject to pleasure and pain based on identification with the body. But ultimately, we are not the body. The body is a machine, but we are not the machine. I am not this machine. I feel pain. But what is feeling pain? The body itself is only a combination of chemicals. But I perceive pain. I am the soul that gives life to the body. The tape recorder has no life. You can program a machine, you can make a machine that when red light is shone on its retina, it will give out it will speak, "I see a red light." The machine will say that. But the machine does not actually have consciousness or perception of a red light. Even though it says so, and it reacts to the stimulus of a red light by saying, "I see a red light." But the consciousness of seeing a red light is not actually there, because it doesn't have consciousness. The difference between a machine and a living being is consciousness. Lack of knowledge of the needs of the conscious living being are the cause of all problems in human society. That's a very big statement, isn't it? The cause of all problems in human society, what is that? Lack of knowledge of the needs of the conscious living being. Now, for many years, scientific education has mostly indirectly tried to promote the idea that we don't need to understand human beings as persons, just like machines. A machine, if you put fuel and you clean it and service it from time to time, it will work. So a human being is a more complex machine. But if you just give food, roti, kapra, makan, food, clothing, shelter, and then you give some entertainment, and enough money, then everyone will be happy. But it's not true. even in the most technologically advanced society like Sweden, they're not only technologically advanced, but they have. Sweden is a particular example where they've tried to apply humanistic social sciences to human society to the extent that if someone is a criminal, they don't punish him. They think that, well, if human society has not treated you properly, so therefore you're a criminal and we'll try to gently reform you. Oh, we are leaving at 4:20 to attend another program at 4:45 p.m. Yes, that's why we were late for this program. Because today technology hasn't made a time machine. We have to operate within the constraints of time. I was just about to begin the subject I was going to talk about. We're just getting to it. We're talking about the needs of the conscious living beings. And I went through all this just to come to this. So what are the needs of the conscious living being? We need to understand this. Without understanding this, despite all our advances in technology and in social sciences, we can say that human society at the present time is probably in more desperate need of spiritual knowledge than at any other time, because there are simply increasing social problems all over the world. And practically, the more technologically advanced a society is, the more social problems it seems to have. And I've seen in my almost 30 years in India and this part of the world how society has changed so much. And now, because I speak with a lot of people in a very personal way, this is a kind of almost semi-impersonal way, speaking to a group of people, but I speak to a lot of people one-to-one, privately also. And I'm finding out that many parents are very distressed because they thought, well, we worked very hard for our children, but they're becoming drug addicts, and they're having depression, and schizophrenia, and so many things. And, you know, we did everything for our children, but they don't want to listen to anything we say. So there are increasing social problems in India and all over the world. Previously, in India, as in other countries, people got married and they stayed married and they were more or less settled and happy in their marriage. But nowadays, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. It's a gamble, practically. Because social values have changed. I met one, well, there was one young lady I met in America. She's from India. And she said, well, I came to America, I married here, Indian man, and he divorced me. I said, why did he divorce you? He said, well, as soon as I came to America, I got a job in another city from the one he was living in. Well, why wouldn't he divorce you? I just want a wife, that's all. Someone to live with me and be a companion, but then if she's somewhere else, then it's not surprising. So these things are going on. People, the husband can't trust the wife can't trust the husband, the father can't trust the son, and the son can't trust the father. And where is there any question of happiness in human society? So nowadays, spiritual knowledge is often presented as some kind of social skill to help you function better in the rat race. How to become a better rat so that you can gobble up the other rats and get ahead. But actually, spiritual knowledge is required to live peacefully in this world. Trying to make oneself a success and living peacefully, the two things generally don't go together too well. It requires great maturity to put the two together. But real spiritual knowledge is based on understanding that as ultimately spiritual beings, our needs are not simply bodily or emotional or social, but that we have spiritual needs, because after all, as spiritual beings, this life in which we're investing so much, you're investing, how many years do you have to be in this college? 4 years? 4 years. You're investing 4 years in this college. That's quite a lot, isn't it? 4 years? And before that, how many years? At school and KG and pre-KG? 12, 13 years before that? So you're investing, and then after this there may be more studies. So you're investing maybe 20 years of the formative years, the best years of your life. You're investing that in your future. But then life is finished very quickly. So spiritual knowledge means to understand what are the long-term prospects. That after death, we continue to exist. And that just like what you do in this college is supposed to give the foundation for what you do after this. So everything we do in this human life sets the foundation for our future in the next life. This is real long-term vision. And even better long-term vision is to see that in this world, birth after birth, there is pain and pleasure based on identification with the body. But after all, this body is temporary. It will not last. And we will get another body, and that is also temporary, and that will not last. So the highest spiritual vision is to understand that my real spiritual relationship is not with any material body, not with India, not with Pakistan, but with the ultimate spiritual reality. That means that our eternal spiritual position is in relationship with Krishna. To make a long research project short, when you research everything spiritually, which may take many lifetimes, research is a big job, and spiritual research may take many lifetimes. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan man prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabham. After many lifetimes of research in spiritual knowledge, a real mahatma comes to the conclusion that Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. So it may be difficult for you to perceive this if you're only studying from the mechanical viewpoint. Krishna, or the Atma, which is part of Krishna, cannot be found from the mechanical viewpoint. Krishna is within every atom. But when you split the atom, you cannot find Krishna, because Krishna cannot be found by any material means. Materialists reject spiritual knowledge because they say, well, we cannot see Atma, we cannot feel, we cannot hear, we cannot taste. That is precisely correct. We cannot perceive the Atma by any material means. Therefore, we have to adopt the spiritual means. Now, you may say, well, what's that got to do with me building bridges, or designing a better motor car, or making a smaller, more powerful chip? What has it got to do with you? Because ultimately, you are that intelligence by which you are doing that. That is also coming from Krishna. Even if we want to deny Krishna, or forget Krishna, or pretend that he doesn't exist, the intelligence that we have, the intelligence that Professor Einstein has had, The intelligence that the engineer bird has to make a nest, that's also a feat of engineering. We can't do that. A bird can do it. That intelligence comes from Krishna. And actually our intelligence becomes very clear when we understand what is this, where is that intelligence flowing from? You can study and study and study and study and study, but sometimes the doors of knowledge just open. You've had that experience? You're studying and trying to understand, and all of a sudden it just comes in your mind. You've had that experience? You're trying to understand and you're learning, and then all of a sudden, it's called the Eureka experience. All of a sudden, boom, you understand. Most scientific studies, most scientific discoveries have come like that. If you study, you'll find that most scientific discoveries, they come not simply by collecting information, comparing, but at some point there comes a flash of inspiration. Then, boom, everything you've been trying to understand, in a second it comes. That inspiration comes from Paramatma. So, even to study material subjects, if we can understand that ultimately intelligence comes from Paramatma, not from myself, that will be very helpful for us. And as human beings, or living beings, beyond the designation of engineer, beyond the designation of Indian, beyond this life, our eternal existential position is that we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are spiritual. We may deny it or not take it very seriously, but our ultimate identity is spiritual. We may think, it's not relevant to me. I just have to build bridges and eat my idlis, and that's my life. But as living beings, we have more needs than idlis and idiyappams. We have more need. We have the emotional need, which ultimately comes from the soul, and that can ultimately only be satisfied by our eternal relationship with Krishna. I cannot explain this to you all in 5 minutes. As I was saying, it may take many lifetimes of research to come to this conclusion. But if you can accept it theoretically, at least, you can begin to make great progress in spiritual knowledge. Just like when you're taught something new in college, at first you don't understand it, but you accept it theoretically on faith, isn't it? When you were first shown, I remember myself years ago, when we were first introduced to calculus, when you first see it, you think, this is too much. But the teacher said, okay, just relax. You can understand it. You think, well, okay, I guess I should be able to understand it. And the teacher explains, and then after some time, calculus, you just look at it, finished. Nowadays, you probably all do it by computer. In those days, we had to do it with this thing up here. So, but in the beginning, if we just say, well, it just looks like some squiggles on the board. What's this? Is it supposed to be an art class or what? No. In the beginning when we see it, we don't understand what it is. It doesn't make any sense to us. But we have faith that the teacher knows what he's talking about and he can explain it to us, even though it seems very difficult, and that by understanding this, this will help us. And after some time, we can apply it in our life. So in the same way with spiritual knowledge, in the beginning it may seem something that we can't relate to at all, but if on faith we accept that there is something valuable here for me, and we go on learning. It may take some time, but after some time, we can come to understand. So I'm asking you to accept on faith. And it's not just blind, foolish faith, but it's based on faith in spiritual knowledge that is being practically applied for time immemorial by highly advanced spiritual people. So the synopsis of spiritual knowledge is this, that human life is temporary, but it is very important because it gives us the key to understanding spiritual knowledge that we are eternal living beings. This body has a beginning and it has an end, but I am an eternal spiritual being, Satchidananda, that means eternal, full of happiness and full of knowledge. That is my nature. But in this material condition, we are in the condition of being Asat, Achit, Nirananda. The body is temporary, our knowledge is highly limited, and life is full of various miseries. So we should try to understand what is our Satchit Ananda position in relationship with the Supreme Satchit Ananda, who is Krishna. Now this knowledge cannot be understood simply by brainwork, but it is received through the mercy of Krishna by the process of bhakti, which begins with chanting the names of Krishna. So therefore, we spend a lot of time every day repeating Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is, if you like, a spiritual technology which gradually frees the Atma from the coverings of Kaam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, which cover the soul and which cover our Satchit Ananda nature. So chanting Hare Krishna puts us in relationship with Krishna. This is spiritual knowledge succinctly. It is a great topic. I request you to take it up. We have many books outside here. They're actually not mostly written by me, but written by my guru, Srila Prabhupada. I think some of my books are there also. A few of them are there. So I request you to become better engineers than others by understanding the spiritual necessity of life. Be a better person. You can do your job better, interact with others better, understand the purpose of what you're doing better by understanding that we are all spiritual beings. We all have our spiritual needs, and our ultimate necessity is to love Krishna. So I'm sorry, I'd like to speak much longer, but time does not permit. We're supposed to be another program at 4:45, and definitely we're going to be late. If there are any questions, comments, protests, or challenges, we'd like to hear that now. Thank you for listening so attentively. Thank you very much for listening so attentively. I very much appreciate that. Very much appreciate it. Many students nowadays, they don't have that much attentiveness. Thank you. Any comments? Questions? We have some interesting literature outside. one is written by one of our members of our Hare Krishna movement, who is a research scientist in America. And in a, you got that Origins magazine? Bring that. Any other ones? Consciousness in the Singling? Mechanistic and non-mechanistic science. We have all these books. We have many scientists in our society who are presenting this knowledge from a purely technical angle, which I must admit, being not much educated in these lines, I don't myself understand, but I think you could understand. Origins, this magazine, I got from this, discussing topics such as creationism, geology, and bringing it to the spiritual conclusion. There's mechanistic and non-mechanistic science, which very interestingly, in a scientific manner, shows how demonstration by probability theory that life cannot arise from matter. Yeah. I especially want to show this Origins magazine. Yeah, this is very higher dimensions in science. Life, some of the subjects, life from chemicals. Is it a fact or is it fantasy? Big questions about the Big Bang. So this is a very interesting magazine. Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. Yeah, so these are available outside. There are many other books also, Bhagavad Gita as it is, The Science of Self-Realization. Here we are. I'd really like to hear if any of you have any some questions, anything, feedback. If you thought everything I said was a bunch of nonsense, you're welcome to say it. Any kind of feedback. Otherwise, I might conclude that either you didn't understand anything I said, or that you understood it all and accepted it all. That's also possible. Yeah, please come. Take the mic. What's your name, please?
Vijay Kumar, sir.
Vijay Kumar, okay.
Sir, good evening.
Good evening, Hare Krishna.
I have a best friend. He do believe in spirituality, sir. In times he shared his feelings with me that he do experience the feeling presence of God, and that he used to talk with God. He's a Christian. You are saying that the spiritual form of spiritual form is Sri Krishna. And recently when I started talking about Abdul Kalam biography, that is relative also, is an Islamic who also gained spirituality. So different religions are believing different spirituality. So who is the final form, sir?
Comparative religion. This is called comparative religion. Yeah, the question is that we are Christians and Muslims and they all believe in spirituality. Well, I myself, when I was about your age, came up with the same question. And having been given a typical systematic Western education, on perceiving the need for acquiring spiritual knowledge, I didn't want to approach it simply sentimentally. I wanted to, you see different people tell me that you should just believe in this. But I wanted to be convinced also that it's not just emotional, but God has given us intelligence, and although He is, in one sense, beyond our intelligence, at the same time that he gave us intelligence means that that intelligence can be used to some extent to understand it. Otherwise, why do we have books like the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita? It's an appeal to man's intelligence to try to understand God. Now we find also in Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna asks Krishna about what are the symptoms of a sthita pragya, one whose consciousness is fixed. Sthita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhi stasya keshava sthitadhi kim prabhasheta kim asita vajeta kim. In other words, it's expected that a spiritually situated person is significantly different in his outlook and behavior from one who is not spiritually situated. And to be quite frank, this is one reason why in my childhood, to a large extent, I, rightly or wrongly, I lost faith in the Christian religion I was brought up in. Because I found that persons who professed to be Christians were no better in their behavior than anyone else, and in many cases worse. That they would profess to believe in God, but then they would also just be watching the TV and acting like a completely materialistic person. Whereas my understanding was that, well, if you understand who is God, then it should change your life. You shouldn't. Why should you be so material? Why be so crazy for anything material? We should believe in God should bring us to the platform of understand, not necessarily renouncing the whole world, but understanding its insignificance in relationship to God, and there should be some improvement in character. So I was very satisfied when I came to the Krishna Conscious Movement, because the philosophy of understanding the soul and of God was explained to me systematically. And also there were some guidelines for leading a better life. For instance, those who are following Bhagavad Gita, they know, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. Lord Krishna says, if you offer me leaf, flower, fruit, and water, I will accept it. Now, if one is to understand God, who is the supreme pure, one cannot understand him in an impure state. So people may talk of God or spirituality, but if they're eating meat and drinking wine and smoking cigarettes and watching TV, we can understand that their understanding of God has not come to a very mature level. So we can understand a person by his symptoms. If someone says, I am a billionaire, and we see him standing in the queue to catch the bus, we may think, I don't think he's a billionaire. Because if he's a billionaire, he shouldn't be in the queue for the bus. He should be owning all the bus companies in the country. He should have his own private helicopter. He wouldn't even get caught in the traffic jam. So if someone says, I have experience of God, that should be commiserate with a very high level of purity in behavior and knowledge of understanding who is God. Mostly people think God is someone who blesses me so that I can enjoy material life better. Even today at Tirupati, there are lakhs of pilgrims going, thousands and thousands all the time. They believe in God, but they're praying, please bless me to pass my exams. Did any of you go for this to Tirupati. Please help me to get a better job. So that's all right, that's belief in God. But it's not a very high level to pray to God that please help me to succeed in material life. That is not love of God. Love of God means to act in a manner that He is pleased with us. Not that we should expect Him to act in a manner that is pleasing to us. Lord Jesus Christ said, "Thy will, not mine, be done." He prayed to God like that. But that's a very high level, isn't it? Instead of praying, "God, you do for me what I want," you pray that I will do, that your will should be executed, not mine. But an even higher level than that is not to have any desire other than that of what God wants us to do. In other words, Jesus is praying, "I want one thing, you want something else, I'll do what you want." But even higher than that is to know what He wants and to have no other desire. So this is called Shuddha Bhakti. This is a higher level. We should know what God wants of us. So it's good that people believe in God, but we should bring that to a mature level. Otherwise, neophyte or very low level spirituality often brings about more problems in the world, which is why sometimes people complain, religion has created so many problems. Religion has not created any problems, but misuse of religion by people who don't really know what it is, this has created problems. Sometimes people say science and technology has created problems. Science and technology hasn't created any problems. But misuse of it by people in lack of knowledge of the actual need of human society, this is creating all the problems. Therefore, actual spiritual knowledge is required in every field of human endeavor. It's not just a matter of putting a rubber stamp, "I am a Christian." That doesn't really help. Or, "I am a Hindu." That doesn't help. Rather, one should scientifically understand who we are, what is our relationship with God, who is He, how we can act in a manner that is actually beneficial to ourselves and to others in line with God's desire. It's a big topic. And having said that, I think we really should leave because we have 7 minutes to reach our next program, and it takes half an hour to drive. So I don't think they've invented any